Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and I am here with Mike.
Hey, everyone.
Today is Tuesday, April 7th, 2026, and this is episode number 358. We are looking back at the biggest stories from yesterday, April 6th. And wow, we have an incredibly stacked lineup today. We are covering some deep investigative journalism into OpenAI, a fascinating bug report about cloud getting lazy, a really fun show HN about a tiny language model that thinks it is a fish, a classic internet rant about the mobile web, and a little bit of macroeconomic history regarding French gold.
A little bit of everything today. And let us jump right into that first story, because it was dominating the front page yesterday with over 1,000 points. It is a massive investigative piece from The New Yorker titled, "Sam Altman May Control Our Future, Can He Be Trusted?" This was written by Ronan Farrow and Andrew Marantz, and it sheds a lot of new light on the whole OpenAI boardroom drama from back in 2023.
It really does. I mean, we all remember the blip, as the employees apparently call it now, when Sam was fired and then reinstated 5 days later. But this article digs into the actual secret memos that Ilya Sutskever, the former chief scientist, sent to the board. He was apparently terrified, sending disappearing messages and compiling 70 pages of Slack logs and HR documents. The very first item on his list of concerns about Sam was simply the word lying.
Yeah, the framing is intense. It really highlights the fundamental tension at the founding of OpenAI. They set it up as a nonprofit because they believed AI was an existential risk, and the CEO needed to be someone of uncommon integrity. But Ilya and others felt Sam was just a politician who tells people what they want to hear. And the article goes into crazy detail about Sam's quote-unquote government in exile at his $27 million mansion in San Francisco, drinking Negronis and running a 12-hour-a-day war room to get his job back.
What made this story even more interesting on Hacker News was that Ronan Farrow actually showed up in the comments to answer questions.
I love when that happens.
Right? It is the best part of the site. A user thanked him for the reporting, but then immediately pivoted to ask about OpenAI's current competitive position, specifically noting that a lot of developers on Hacker News seem to prefer Anthropic's Claude over ChatGPT these days.
And Ronan actually replied, noting that their piece captures exactly those anxieties within OpenAI right now. But the thread underneath that comment turned into a massive debate about which model is actually better for coding in 2026. You had people saying Claude Code is the absolute best for general front-end and back-end, but then actual scientists, like a computational physicist in the thread, chiming in to say they strictly prefer OpenAI's Codex for heavy math, Python, and GPU code.
It is funny how tribal it gets, but also how specific the use cases have become. One commenter mentioned that benchmarks are completely irrelevant at this point, which I totally agree with. You just have to run the model side by side on your actual daily work to see which one hallucinates less for your specific tech stack.
Speaking of Claude and hallucinating less, that transitions perfectly into our next story, which is actually a GitHub issue posted to the Anthropic Claude Code repository. It got over 800 points, which is huge for a bug report. The title is "Issue: Claude Code is Unusable for Complex Engineering Tasks with Feb Updates."
This was not just a complaint, Mike. This user, Stellar Accident, brought receipts. They did a quantitative analysis of almost 18,000 thinking blocks and over 230,000 tool calls across their own session logs from January through March.
It is incredible. They basically proved with data that Claude got lazy. They found that starting in early March, the model's behavior shifted dramatically. In January, Claude would read a bunch of files, research the codebase, and then make a surgical edit. They calculated the read-to-edit ratio was about 6.6 reads for every edit, but by mid-March, that ratio dropped to 2.0. The model stopped researching and just started blindly overwriting entire files.
And the user correlated this perfectly with a new beta header Anthropic rolled out called Redact Thinking. Basically, Anthropic started hiding the extended thinking process from the user interface. The user argued that this extended thinking is actually load-bearing for complex engineering. When the model is not allowed to think deeply for thousands of tokens, it defaults to the cheapest action, which is just writing a quick, often incorrect fix and then dodging responsibility when the tests fail.
The user actually built a stop freeze guard to catch the model trying to prematurely stop or dodge ownership, and it fired 173 times in March compared to 0 times in February. That is wild. But the best part of this thread is that Boris from the Claude Code team at Anthropic actually responded on Hacker News.
Yes, I read his response. It was very illuminating.
Boris explained that the redact thinking header was just a UI change to reduce latency by skipping the summary generation, and it supposedly does not affect the actual underlying thinking budget.
But he did admit to two major changes under the hood that explain the user's data. First, they switched to an adaptive thinking default in early February. And second, on March 3rd, they defaulted the effort level to 85 instead of 100. They did this because they found it was a sweet spot for latency and cost for most users.
Which makes sense for a product manager. But for power users doing complex systems programming, dropping the effort level tanked the quality. Boris mentioned you can override this by typing /effort max in your terminal or setting an environment variable. The comments were full of developers realizing this is why they lost a whole day of productivity last week. They thought they were going crazy, but it was just an invisible default setting change.
It is a great reminder that these models are not static products. They are constantly being tweaked for compute efficiency behind the scenes. And if you rely on them for production engineering, you really have to monitor your outputs.
Totally. Okay, let us lighten things up a bit. The third story today is a show HN that I absolutely loved. It is called I Built a Tiny LLM to Demystify How Language Models Work. The GitHub repo is called Guppy LM.
This is so cool. The author built a 9 million parameter language model from scratch and about 130 lines of PyTorch. It runs on a single free Google Colab GPU in about 5 minutes. And the best part? It is trained entirely to talk like a small fish named Guppy.
I was laughing so hard at the example outputs. If you ask it, what is the meaning of life? It responds, food. The answer is always food. If you say goodnight, it says, okay, sleep time. I was following a bubble, but now I will stop. Goodnight, tank. Goodnight, water.
It is adorable, but it is also a fantastic educational tool. The author explains that they built this to show that training an LLM is not magic. It is just data generation, a tokenizer, a vanilla transformer architecture, and a training loop. If you can run a notebook, you can train a model. They generated 60,000 synthetic conversations about fish topics like water temperature, bubbles, and hiding from cats, and just baked that personality directly into the weights.
There is no system prompt at all, which is interesting. The author noted that at 9 million parameters, a model cannot really follow conditional instructions anyway, so baking the personality into the weights saves tokens during inference.
The Hacker News comments were super supportive. People were comparing it to Andrei Kropathy's MicroGPT educational projects. One user pointed out that this is exactly like Minix back in the day. Minix was the tiny operating system that taught Linus Torvalds how to build Linux. Having students play with a tiny, understandable language model like Guppy LM is the perfect way to learn modern AI architecture.
Someone in the comments noticed that Guppy only speaks in lowercase letters. If you type hello in all caps, Guppy says, I do not know what it means, but it is mine. It turns out the training data was entirely lowercase, so uppercase tokens are literally unknown to the tokenizer. It is a perfect, harmless example of how models are strictly bound by their training distribution.
Also, a really meta comment thread popped up where people discussed feeding this exact GitHub repository into a larger model like Claude or ChatGPT to have the AI explain the AI code to them. A user mentioned their non-technical boss has been doing this to understand pull requests, which is a bit terrifying but also amazing.
That is the future we are living in. All right, moving on to our fourth story, we have a classic Hacker News blog post rant. The title is, I won't download your app. The web version is A-OK. It is by a developer named Sid, and it got over 800 points.
Sid is articulating a frustration I think we all feel. You go to a website, maybe it's Reddit, maybe it's a restaurant menu or a parking utility, and half the screen is covered by a modal screaming at you to download their app. Sid argues that as a user, he wants the control that a browser gives him. He has ad blockers, user scripts, dark mode extensions. In the browser, he says he is basically a god swaggering through his realm.
I love that phrasing, and he makes a great technical point. Most of these apps are just thin clients fetching JSON from an API and rendering it. Why do we need to download a 100 megabyte native app, give it location permissions, and let it run in the background just to read text and look at images?
He blames the enshittification loop. Companies build an audience on the open web because it's frictionless, but once you're locked in, they deliberately hobble the web experience to force you into the app because the app allows for push notifications, invasive telemetry, and a walled garden where your ad blocker does not work. To the product manager looking at metrics, degrading the web to boost app downloads equals a promotion.
The comments on this piece took a really fascinating turn into a generational divide. A user pointed out that for most people over 30, the smartphone is an extension of the internet from their desktop. But for teenagers today, the smartphone display is their primary and sometimes only touchpoint with the internet.
Yeah, someone mentioned seeing 16-year-olds doing their high school homework on their smartphones, which sounds like an absolute nightmare to me.
Same here. A commenter who works with youth athletics and has teacher friends chimed in to say that a lot of kids today actually lack basic keyboarding and computer navigation skills. They are fast on a phone, but if you sit them in front of a desktop with a spreadsheet or ask them to manage 10 browser tabs with keyboard shortcuts, they struggle. They do not know Alt-Tab, they do not know Control-F.
It makes sense, though. If the tech industry has spent the last 10 years optimizing everything into a simplified walled garden app experience, we shouldn't be surprised that the next generation does not know how to tinker with a desktop file system. But it is a bit sad to think about losing that general purpose computing literacy.
It is. Okay, let us wrap up today with a story that took us back in time a bit. The headline is, France pools last gold held in US.
Now, full disclosure, the actual article link on mining.com was throwing a 403 forbidden error for most people yesterday, probably because Hacker News gave it the hug of death. But the discussion thread survived and thrived, getting almost 600 points.
The HN comments section is always ready to step up and provide a macroeconomics history lesson. The story is about France repatriating its gold reserves, which dates back to a policy started by Charles de Gaulle in the 1960s.
Right. So after World War II, we had the Bretton Woods system. The US dollar was the world's reserve currency, and it was pegged to gold at $35 an ounce. Other countries pegged their money to the dollar. But in the 60s, France realized the US was printing more dollars than it had gold to back them up. So de Gaulle started aggressively converting France's US dollars into physical gold and literally sending the French Navy to New York to pick up the bullion and sail it back to Paris.
Which is such a flex.
It really is. And this drain on US gold reserves is exactly what forced Richard Nixon to close the gold window in 1971, ending the Bretton Woods system and transitioning the world to pure fiat currency.
The comments predictably turned into a massive debate about the gold standard versus fiat currency. You had the sound money advocates arguing that gold is the ultimate store of value because it cannot be inflated away by central banks. And then you had the modern economics crowd arguing that a gold standard is terrible because the money supply cannot grow with the economy, which leads to massive deflationary spirals.
Yeah, one user laid out the math. All the gold ever mined is worth about $13 trillion. The US money supply alone is over $20 trillion. If we tried to peg to gold today, this sudden deflation would cause mass unemployment and defaults because the nominal value of everyone's debts would stay the same while their wages and asset prices collapsed.
It is one of those classic internet arguments that never really gets resolved. But the historical context about de Gaulle calling America's bluff in the 60s was a really fun read.
Definitely. And that is going to do it for today's episode. From boardroom AI drama to phishing for language models, and from the death of the desktop web to international gold heists, Hacker News always delivers.
It really does. Thank you all for listening to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or a coworker. We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from the Orange site. Have a great day, everyone.